There will always be seed, time, and harvest. Whatever seed you may plant, be patient, and over time, there will be harvest. This is life.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. And of course, Basketball Monster is now open for subscriptions and memberships for the 2017-18 season. So you can join up there, get all of our projections, my projections, there's Kyle's projections, as well as a premium edition if you're looking for something there. Trade analysis, projected standings, weekly projections will be coming, daily projections will be coming. Everything is there on the site, plus our articles that are going up at a tremendous rate. So make sure you are checking out Basketball Monster to subscribe and get all of the tools to help you win your fantasy basketball league. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble and on Facebook at facebook.com/RedRockBasketball. Taking a break from the season preview podcast today. I've got 11 of those down. I think I've got about another 11 or 12 that are going to be coming for you next week as well. But we're going to intersperse some other shows throughout that time. And today is one of those shows that we will be interspersing. What we're going to do is start the Positional Tiers podcast series, which if you remember the last couple of years, we have done that, breaking down each position and where players fit in terms of tiers, which we'll explain a little bit more in the show. And I say we because I am joined by one of my Basketball Monster colleagues, fellow Australian. Unfortunately, he is from Adelaide, so I don't want to dock him too many tier positions for that. Matt Smith, welcome back.
Josh, how are you?
It's good to have you back. The people have spoken. They've requested more Matt Smith, and you're back to talk positional tiers. And we're going to start off with the point guards.
We are, yeah. It's been a while since I've been on, but nice to be back. And only about 6 weeks from the start of the season now, so yeah, ramping up for sure.
Now, before we do get stuck into talking about the positional tiers and point guards, a couple of things that I do want to mention, and it's a common thing that happens every time this year. Or this time of year, every year when the Basketball Monster projections come out, is that people look at things and they don't interpret them the way that I feel they should be interpreted. A couple of things, people will often look and they'll go to click rankings because there's a menu that says rankings. And so they'll click that and they'll go player rankings and they'll go, and someone said to me that day, why have you got Rudy Gay so high? How can you possibly have him in the third round? It's ridiculous. That's last year's numbers. Rankings is what has happened. So it's looking at what the player has done, and we rank them based on what they have done. If you want to look at what we think they will do, it's projections. And Rudy Gay is clearly not a third round player for this season. So when you're looking at things, it's projections. And that's why I always, and I say this on the podcast all the time, fantasy basketball rankings going into a draft are bullshit. They don't mean anything. These numbers are so irrelevant most of the time. You could be picking at pick 70 and you go, oh, there's a guy sitting here that's ranked 65th. But if he doesn't work for your team, it doesn't mean anything. The guy that's ranked 90th might be much better for what you need and what you've already drafted. So going off, that's why I don't provide, you know, here's my ranking list, here's my dynasty ranks, because they're bullshit and they just cause more confusion. I feel they cause more errors in drafting than anything else. So when people come to me, oh, you've got this guy too high, you've got this guy, why have you got him at 50? I don't think he should be at 50. My main thing that I will say to you is, what about the projection do you think is wrong? Like, which part do you think is incorrect? Do you think that his assists are too high, his points too high, his field goal percentage too low? Like, which part do you think is wrong, rather than just looking at a numerical value? And you might as well play in a fantasy football league or a points league if you're just looking at a numerical value. And that's not how the ranks work. So when you're looking at these things and say, oh, yeah, I don't think that he should be 25th ranked player, have a look at the other numbers. Does everything else look normal? How does that fit in? And that's because the rankings are all to do with scarcity and standard deviations and, you know, sample sizes and all those sort of things. And that's how those overall value numbers and subsequently the rank gets brought up. But if you think that the player's stats look fine, then the rank is not, it's not a figure that's determined by me personally. I don't look at it and go, I think this guy should be 30th, so let's put him 30th. I do all those individual stats, and that's where the guy comes out. So it's not me going, he should be here. If there's an issue with an individual statistic, that's what, you know, I'm here to discuss and talk about and go, oh, yeah, fair enough, you got a good point. Maybe we'll change this. And I'm going to do a whole podcast on this, but I want to get this out of the way now. The next thing I wanted to talk about is people will very, very often, nearly all the time, will come in and talk about something in terms of the ranks, and they go, you got this guy too low. And I'll say, invariably, have you got turnovers turned on? And they'll say, yeah, because it skews things immensely. Now, you've heard me talk about turnovers plenty of times, and I know lots of you listening, will you disagree with me. Oh, you've got to have turnovers, Josh. Turnovers are the best. I love turnovers as a category. They make it like real-life basketball. I'm not here to debate that, but what I'm here to talk about is how turnovers impact the rankings. And Matt, you are someone who is very anti-punting, so you're not someone who goes in and punts categories. I'll punt 1, 2, 3, 4 categories if I need to. That doesn't bother me. But Matt, you don't punt any categories. But if you're in a 9-category league, what do you do with turnovers?
Well, this is where you and I debate around the definition of punting, but yes. I basically ignore that category. Don't worry about it. At the end of the day, if you're punting assists and worrying about turnovers, or punting turnovers and trying to be good in assists, like at the end of the day, you're going to be 1-1 in your head-to-head league. So, as you said, turn turnovers off. Just ignore them. Don't even worry about them, and go from there. And the same thing with rankings. You know, after the first round, it completely changes. If you draft Stephen Curry in the first round, it's going to dictate your second, third, fourth pick, as opposed to if you draft Anthony Davis, it completely changes. So, yeah, throw rankings out the window and throw turnovers out the window as well.
Yeah, so, like, you know, I'm all for ranking. Here's my top 12 guys. Here's the first round guys. Yeah, and this is the order that I would potentially take them in. That's fine. But after that, it does depend. You've got Curry. You don't have to worry about getting high threes with your next pick. You can get it later on. And you can really do. And especially, like, once you get to the fourth round, you've got your first three guys. And then it's really dependent on what's happened beforehand as to how you start building your team. But say, for example, like with turnovers, a guy we're going to talk about today, John Wall, you know, his rank is like 26th if turnovers are on. And someone was arguing, 26 is ridiculous. Like, well, why is he so low? That's a joke. There's not 25 better players in him. Of course there's not. No one would ever take John Wall at 26. It's ridiculous. Just like you would never take Otto Porter at 20, which is where from memory, he was roughly around there and in 9 category leagues last year because he turned the ball over like 0.3 times per game. You would never do that. Dennis Schroeder drops like 50 spots if you turn turnovers on. Dennis Smith drops like 80 spots. D'Angelo Russell like 40 spots. These are all things, and if you did that, if you had that on, you're just never going to draft these guys. And again, if you're trying to get assists up, you're going to lose turnovers. And if you don't care about assists, you're going to win turnovers. That's as simple as it is. So this is not a debate about whether turnovers is a good category or whether it's something that you should, you know, attempt to win or any of that. But putting turnovers on when looking at projections and draft trackers, it totally skews value. It puts LeBron to be like the 19th best player or something. It puts Westbrook to be pick 9, which is ridiculous. You're never going to pick him there. He's not the 9th best player. And that's, you know, something I really do need and I'm going to constantly stress it over the next 6 to 8 weeks as people will continually say that, and they'll give me these numbers. How have you got this guy so much higher? And I'll say it's because of turnovers. And it has such a huge, huge impact, like 30, 40 spots. That also illustrates why rankings are ridiculous anyway, because you're one category off and everything changes by 40 spots. And depending on what your team needs, you might have no need for that category. And it just changes the whole complexion of all of this sort of stuff. So that's another reason why rankings are something. You should never be, you know, printing out a ranking list and just ticking it off and drafting that way. It just doesn't work, and it doesn't work well. You might as well just set your draft on auto draft and do it that way, because it just doesn't work otherwise. But let's get into the bulk of what we're talking about. There'll be more of this discussion, I guess, as we go through this. We're going to be talking point guard tiers today. But Matt, if anyone hasn't listened to this show before, listened to our tiers discussion, doesn't know anything what we're talking about, what's the concept of positional tiers for fantasy basketball and drafting?
Yeah, so basically we're trying to group players of a similar overall value. Now, for these tiers and the tiers in each position, we'll be using our 8-cat value. So once again, removing turnovers, based on our basketball projections, which, Josh, you've spent hundreds of hours looking at. And just a couple of pointers on tiers in general. Tiers don't necessarily follow rounds. So a tier 3 player or group of players doesn't necessarily then mean they'll be drafted in round 3. And likewise, tiers aren't the same value across positions. So a tier 4 shooting guard doesn't necessarily have the same value as a tier 4 power forward, for instance. So look at them exclusively, but then at the same time, if you can put all of these tiers together, it's a good way to identify positional and statistical scarcity, if you like.
I think, and you get the hang of what we're talking about when we go through these, and you'd see guys, and there'll be players where people will often ask me a question. They'll say, you know, who do you like better here? And the most common one I get is the guys we have in tier 2. And I'd say, look, in the end, they're so close in value. Like, it depends on what you're trying to do, and it depends on what your personal preference is, because these guys are all so close. But you know, if you're talking about a guy from tier two versus tier three, then I'd pretty much take any of the tier two guys over the tier three guys in most cases. But they're just so close in what they do. One might have slightly higher threes, one might have a slightly higher free throw percentage, and that differentiation between those two categories pushes them in that same zone, but it just puts them close, and the actual order of them doesn't really matter. It's up and down as to how you want to approach it. So let's start with tier one, the best of the best, the elite guys, Matt, and I don't think many people are going to be shocked to know who you've got in tier one for point guards.
No, there shouldn't be Russell Westbrook and Steph Curry, obviously. For the exercise, James Harden's classed as a shooting guard now, so yeah, the addition of Paul George, all that does is bring Russell Westbrook back to the top of the pack. Can still make a case for him as the number one overall pick, and it's incredible to think that 2 years ago, when Steph Curry had one of the most dominant seasons we've seen in both reality and fantasy, that you might be able to get him at pick five or six in most drafts now. So yeah, those guys are at the top of the board.
Westbrook, for example, like comes in at number two on our projections. You turn turnovers and he goes to number nine. And there is no, under no circumstance would anyone ever pick him at number nine. That just, it's a great example of why, you know, having turnovers and when looking at these ranks or projections is not a great way to go. But yeah, those two guys there, if anyone said to me, I took Westbrook at one, we have no problem. If anyone said to me, I took Curry at one, I'd say, you know what? That's fine. These guys are all so close. So I think the top six guys are pretty close for that number one position. How do we see, or how do you see, I don't know how I see it, but how do you see the addition of Paul George? What is that doing to Westbrook, do you think?
I think naturally it was going to be always difficult for him to average a triple-double for the second straight season. So with the addition of Paul George, likely drops his points a little bit, probably drops his rebounds slightly as well. Maybe a slight uptick in field goal percentage. I'm not exactly sure how his ranking or projection changed in regards to that, what you've done there, Josh, but probably points and rebounds in particular are the biggest two that will impact with George coming across.
I dropped his rebounds by about two a game, his points by about three a game, and his field goal percentage went up by over a percent, almost 1.5%. It went up, and his three-point percentage went up a bit as well, and a significant rise in his true shooting percentage as well. But it keeps him as a number two player, and the reason why that he's up that high is because last year him and Harden were just so far ahead of everyone else that they could cop a 15% reduction in their output and still be in consideration for that number one spot, much like Curry in 2015-16 was just so far ahead of everybody else that when Durant came, he copped a hit, and he went back from the clear number one to being a guy that if you took him at number three, then it was fine, and he finished in that, you know, 2-4 sort of zone last season anyway. And that's a similar situation that both Westbrook and Harden are going to be facing this year. They were just so far above everyone else that the reduction that they cop from, you know, getting Paul George or getting Chris Paul, it just brings them back to the pack and makes those one, two positions more debatable now than what they would have been if they had have just been left alone. But yeah, everything you've said there, I agree with. Now, the most interesting tier, I reckon, here with point guards, Matt, is tier two. You've got four guys in this group. Who are they?
Yeah, they're Chris Paul, John Wall, Damian Lillard, and Kyrie Irving. So these are the sort of the four point guards that you're going to get at the end of round one, start of round two. And I guess the best thing about these guys is you've probably got three really good bigs that you compare them with as well, with Nikola Jokic, DeMarcus Cousins, and Rudy Gobert. So some fantastic options. Obviously, Paul and Wall bring your elite assists and steals, and Lillard and Irving, your scoring threes and free throw percentage.
Yeah, so these are the guys that are often get the question, who have you got, Dame or Johnny Wall? Have you got Wall or Kyrie? Like, where's Chris Paul for? And in reality, they're just all this, they're all in this exact same spot, in the exact same tier. One thing I do, I'm relatively aggressive on Kyrie this year. I don't think that he's going to be coming out and averaging 30 a game or anything like that. But one thing that I do think is going to significantly increase Kyrie's value this season is the fact that last year, Isaiah Thomas was the number one player for free throw percentage impact because he shot 90% from the line, which is exactly what Kyrie does. But he got to the line a significant amount, and Irving didn't have the ball in his hands as often as what he would have liked playing in Cleveland alongside LeBron, so he doesn't have that opportunity necessarily to drive to the rack as often. I think he gets that opportunity boosted in Boston, so he gets his free throw attempts moving from maybe 4 to 6 per game. And at 90%, that is a significant boost to his value. So that puts him right around the turn, I believe. And you could make an argument for him to be the first out of this group. You can make the argument for Paul. I'm a massive Johnny Wall fan. You could make the argument for him. Dame Lillard was a top 10 player post All-Star break last year. any of these guys at the start of the second round is totally fine. And I guess it's how you see it. Do you see Dame continuing that form he had with Nurkic? Do you see Chris Paul really dropping off? Do you see Mike D'Antoni playing Chris Paul more minutes in a faster-paced offense and really elevating him again? How does Kyrie fit in Boston? But they're all so close in this area that there's no definitive take this guy, then take this guy, then take this guy. They're all sitting in that tier. Now, tier three is an interesting one. I think we've got a lot to talk about in tier three, Matt. Who have you got in that that next group of point guards?
Yeah, so we've got Kyle Lowry, Mike Conley, and Isaiah Thomas. Now, I guess Isaiah Thomas is the big question mark with that hip injury. Now, these tiers and rankings are based on per game value. If we look at total value, then it drops Isaiah Thomas about 80 spots in the rankings. So maybe Josh, you want to talk about using replacement value as well, which might give a better overall snapshot of Isaiah's value. But at this stage, we just don't know when he'll be playing and how many games he will miss.
What you said there, so when you go to projection screen on Basketball Monster, it says a value type and you've got total per game per 36. I'm just using the per game. And there's a button that says use replacement player. So what it does is for the games that Thomas is projected to miss, it uses a waiver wire equivalent point guard and adds those stats to what Thomas will do in the games that he plays and averages those out over 82 games and makes that a per game value. So that drops him about 15 to 20 spots. Now, at this stage, we actually don't know when Thomas is going to be coming back. Initially, it was like, oh, maybe he's going to miss the first couple of weeks of the season, and that was going to maybe 5 to 7 games he would miss. That's not too bad, but now reports seem less rosy. We know the issue with the Cavs and the trade. Thomas isn't running yet. He's talked about, he'll be fine when he comes back, but not like he's not saying I'll be back for the start of the year. There was that report saying that maybe it's the All-Star break. So what I've done at the moment, I've just given a tentative date. I think he might be back in sometime in December. But I don't know that. That's me taking a guess. It's also me putting it out there just saying, just watch it. If you're going to draft Thomas, just really watch it. Don't expect him back early. If he does, it's a bargain. We just don't know. So I'm saying let's go the middle of December. That's going to make him miss 27 to 30 games. And taking him at his per game value is just 100% the wrong thing to do. But if he is right to go for the start of the season, then he fits right in. Now, on the inverse of what Kyrie Irving does, I think that Thomas, I thought he was always due for a step back this year anyway, but I think his free throw attempts will dip this season playing alongside LeBron James. So that's going to cut a little bit of his value down. In terms of the other stats that they did through the year, him and Irving, they were basically identical. Playing alongside LeBron when Irving did, or Thomas playing alongside Bradley and Horford and those guys. Obviously, there's Hayward there now, but they were pretty much the same. But that free throw attempt rate was a huge differentiator, and I think that might impact Thomas there. Now, with Lowry, Matt, we've seen a pretty common trend with him over the last, say, 3 to 4 seasons. What's that trend that's been a real pain in the ass, I guess, for fantasy owners?
Probably his decline after the All-Star break and obviously the injury concern that he also brings there as well. So, and I guess Kyle Lowry and Mike Conley are two good point guards to identify, because if you're picking sort of in that top 2 or 3 spots and you're looking at Durant, Harden, maybe Giannis as well, these are probably the point guards you're going to target with your second or third picks. So if you take Giannis, maybe you want some more threes with that pick, and you do take Lowry. If you take Kevin Durant, and maybe you want a couple more steals, maybe then you look at Mike Conley. So these are all the scenarios you need to play out before the draft.
The thing about Lowry is right. The last 3 seasons post All-Star break, he's gotten hurt and his play has declined significantly, either through injury or wearing down. He's been playing a shitload of minutes. I just did the Raptors season preview podcast with Sean Woodley, and we were both in agreement that we think that Lowry is going to play a little bit less this year. This will be the opportunity that he's now locked in for 3 years, that he won't be playing 37, 38 minutes a night. They might cut him down to 36 and hopefully give D'Lon Wright a little bit of extra playing time. And that might be able to preserve him for post-break. But he is a risky pick because this has been a consistent history. Too many minutes, too many minutes, too many minutes. Oh, shit, February injured. And that's been happening the last 3 years, and it's like a definite cause. And that's what scared me off guys like Bradley Beal last year. And he ended up being fine, and that could be the case with Lowry. But Beal was like 40 minutes a game, 40 minutes a game, 40 minutes a game. He had 6 games in a row. Oh, stress fracture, leg, out for 3 weeks. Come back, do the same thing, stress fracture. I'm like, you know what? If they're going to keep playing in big minutes, I'm scared. And that's the concern I have with Lowry here. Conley's had his injury problems as well, but given the state of this Memphis team, I'm big on Conley. Yep. I reckon he's going to have a monster season. He could be putting up career numbers, career scoring numbers. I think he's going to be a huge, huge player. He was awesome last year, and he fractured his back. Imagine he hadn't had that setback halfway halfway through the season. I think he's going to be an absolute monster for this team this year. So out of those three guys, I probably would take Conley. I just feel a little bit safer, even though the per-game projections might favour Lowry marginally. Just I feel a little bit more confident with Conley there. But in certain situations, as you said, you know, going with Lowry could easily be a better option for you. Now, tier four, we look at, got three point guards sitting in this tier, and they all have their own individual concerns. And that happens as we move down the tiers. More concerns crop up. They're not as strong across multiple categories. So what's tier four look like?
Tier four with Eric Bledsoe, Ricky Rubio, and Kemba Walker. Now, as you identified, obviously Ricky Rubio and Kemba Walker bring a different skill set, but in terms of their overall value, it's pretty much identical. And that concern you raise is true. Obviously, Eric Bledsoe, we saw him get shut down around the All-Star break last year with the Suns. Ricky Rubio, I know you don't like calling him injury prone. But there's some risk associated with that pick as well. And as you mentioned, Isaiah Thomas, with that hip injury as well. So all the talk is about drafting a big early because the scarcity in bigs. But once again, if you want an elite point guard and you don't have a top five pick and you're not getting Westbrook or Curry, then it's probably Paul or Wall or Lillard, Irving, Mike Conley, these sort of guys that are going to be your number one point guard options.
All these guys do have injury history. As I said, Rubio, I hate calling him injury prone. He has had some problems, but he was fine last year. Kemba Walker's had off-season knee surgery 3 years in a row. So at some point, that's I feel like it's going to bite someone in the ass. Like he's played lots of games, but continually having knee surgery is not great in the off-season. And Bledsoe, the real issue is Matt, sorry to say, but the Suns are going to be shit again this season. So do they just do the same thing? Are they? You know, I get the feeling that the league's going to say, "Come on, man, you can't just sit this bloke for 2 months. You can't just sit your best player for 2 months." There surely has to be some sort of discussion, but I don't know how they can police that. And I could easily see them coming after the All-Star break and just saying, "Well, Bledsoe's gone," and then your fantasy playoffs are in trouble. So in rotisserie, he's not too bad in that zone, but in head-to-head, much like we have that risk with Lowry. Do you think that's a realistic possibility that we're just not going to see him post-feed? Because he was pissed with it as well. He was not happy about that situation at all. So maybe they placate him and play him, but there's a real chance that he just doesn't play in that second half of the year.
Well, there is, but there's also a chance that he gets traded to a borderline playoff-bound team and they need to play him 35 minutes a night and he posts top 20 value over the past, last 2 months of the season. So these are all hypotheticals, and obviously we just don't know, but of course that's a massive risk if he does remain with Phoenix for the entirety of the season, that he does get shut down and misses the last 10 to 20 games of the season.
I've always railed against shutdown risk because it's always been overblown. I don't draft Melo because he's a shutdown risk, and sites will continue, in January, he's going to get shut down. Yeah, Brook Lopez is going to get shut down. When that had never happened. It just something had never happened. But what we saw last year was unprecedented. A guy, it's healthy to say, well, you're just not playing for the next 2 months. That just has never happened before in the history of the NBA, and it finally happened. So now I do have that concern with Bledsoe. And people forget how good he is. People forget that. Now, maybe you might disagree with this, Matt. He's the best player on the Suns by a considerable margin, in my opinion, not just fantasy. But he is very, very good, and he is a top 20 fantasy type of guy if they actually play him. But who knows? Who knows what they do? Who knows how that organization will treat things this year? And it does put a definite damper. Do you think he's the best player on the Suns?
Yes. Yep. Sure is. Yeah, both ways. Obviously, Devin Booker there, very good young player, but yeah, in terms of overall player and what he brings to the team, yeah, Eric Bledsoe is still the man in Phoenix for sure.
I like these tier five point guards. I like them a lot. I think that if you are looking for those early bigs, which I do understand, I think the dearth of big men is a little bit overstated. It is true that there aren't huge amounts of solid. I think if you're looking for a big man who's really good at free throw percentage, yeah, they go early. Jokic, Towns, Porzingis, Turner, they're gone. Like, they're gone in the second round. You don't find those guys anywhere else, but that's not the be-all and end-all of every fantasy team and how it's all built. That doesn't mean everything. So I think there's a little bit, my major concern in the early rounds is not necessarily centers. I want to pay attention to that. But if you don't get points early on, forget it. You can't compete in points. They go after the first round, like we have the scarcity, statistical scarcity on the draft tracker, you'll see that points category drop into the dark red real quick, and everything else will be sitting in nice and white or green, but that points will drop into dark red pretty quick because you can't get scoring. So I'm really looking for scoring in those early rounds, because if I want to compete in that category, you just can't do it. If you, and I've sort of talked about this before, like out of my projections, my top 50 projected scorers, 9 of those guys were projected outside the top 50 in overall fantasy ranks. And you're like, okay, there's 9 guys who are decent scorers. But every other category was between 19 and 27 of the top 50 were outside the top 50. So you could find more than double the amount of those guys to help you in those other categories apart from points. You could find free throw percentage guys outside the top 50, field goals, blocks, steals, assists. You could, and assists can get harder to find as well, but you could find them all. You can't find scorers. And that's just me, I guess, getting off track there. But I like these tier 5 point guards. These are the guys, if you go for those bigs in that second round, you grab a Turner or a Porzingis, however way you're going, tier 5, we're going to have this run, I think, in the rounds 4 to 6 of a lot of point guards going, but I like this group here you've got in tier 5.
I was going to make exactly the same point. Historically in drafts, you always get that point guard run sort of in round 2 or 3. I think that's going to be pushed back a round or two, and round 4, 5, we're really going to have that point guard run with these tier 5 and tier 6, and maybe even tier 7 point guards jumping up.
Those people. 7 guys are going to go early in some spots as well.
Yeah, for sure. So tier 5, we've got Dennis Schroeder, Drew Holiday, Goran Dragic, and D'Angelo Russell. So yeah, a number of good options depending on what you're looking for. Obviously, Drew Holiday is going to probably take a bit of a dip in terms of his scoring and assists. Goran Dragic is really, really safe there in sort of round 4, so nothing wrong with staying with him. Dennis Schroeder, the main man in Atlanta, but how much can he carry this team, and how much of an impact will that have on his efficiency? And D'Angelo Russell, massive question mark. Is he going to play 28 minutes? Is he going to play 32 minutes? And similarly with Jeremy Lin, who's in the next tier as well. So not quite a boom or bust pick, but he could definitely increase his value with significant playing time in Brooklyn.
Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10, select styles only.
I think you look at Holiday, or you look at Dragic and you go, well, he is just what he is. This is what he's going to give me. I'm pretty confident with that. Yeah, Drew Holiday, he could have been a top 25 guy if Rondo and Cousins weren't there. Like, that's the level he is, but he's pushed down. We saw him struggle a little bit when Cousins arrived. Him playing out of position is just insanity to me with Rondo there. So he's going to cop a hit. But Schroeder's the guy, look, he could go even higher than this. He's going to have a monster usage. I've got him projected at 22-7 in terms of points and assists. If he gets his steals up to 1.5, and if he starts hitting his threes at a better rate than 32%, then we're talking about a bloke that's cracking the top 25, and he's got that upside. And same with D'Angelo Russell. If they just go, well, this is our future, this is our franchise guy that we want to see. If they go, let's go, D'Angelo, let's play 33 a night, and he goes out there and averages 20 with 6.5 assists and 1.5 steals and 2.7 threes, which he could easily do, then you're also talking about a top 30 guy. So they're the two upside guys out of this group, whereas Dragic and Holiday are a little bit more secure. But I'm massive into D'Angelo Russell. And you don't have to pick him there. That's the thing, Matt, and we didn't really talk about that. You probably don't have to pick him in this zone, in this tier. Like, he'll probably slide 2 tiers down in a lot of people's minds, you know, based on what his ADP is on sites. Like, he's getting drafted at 72 on ESPN, which is, you know, well outside this tier 4 range.
Yeah.
So you can get him much later than that, tier 5 range. I really do like him. Now, you referenced already Jeremy Lin, who is in tier 6 here, who was fantastic last year when he actually played, and people will go, injury proneness, bullshit. It was one injury and he just rushed it back. That's all it was. And you can say, he rushed it back. He had 2 months off for a hamstring. Solomon Hill's about to miss 8 months with a hamstring. So hamstrings differ. It was not an injury prone thing. It was the same thing that just kept recurring. Hopefully he is all good to go now. But who else have we got in this tier 6 zone?
Yeah, the other two are Lonzo Ball and Elfrid Payton. I wasn't convinced on Lonzo coming out of the draft, but I'm super impressed in summer league, and I really like this Lakers team for fantasy value this season, led by Lonzo Ball. Now, if other people want to take him inside the top 50, I'll be more than happy to let him go there. But if you can get him outside, I think his counting stats will be good enough to see him finish inside the top 50 come the end of the season. And Alfred Payton is another one who had a really good second half of last year and should look to carry that form into this year. So another guy you can should be able to get outside the top 50 but could easily finish in inside come the end of the season.
Payton is a guy that he was a monster. He shot over 50% from the field in the second half of last year, as I talked about on the Magic preview show the other day. He's still got scope to. He averaged 1.7 steals a game as a rookie. He was down to 1.1 last year. So we know he can get steals. We know he can do that. So he is a guy that can really jump up. Now, Ball's an interesting one. Ball's is a little bit reminiscent of Rajon Rondo. His value, and again, I talked about how we get the value for this, it comes from his ability to get high assist numbers. He averaged almost 10 assists a game in summer league, which is unheard of because players can't hit shots. You know, people can't shoot, so people can't get assists. The fact that he got 9 assists means that he probably was getting a 13, 14 potential assists per game, which is out of control. And it's very Rondo-like. He'll get big assist numbers, which help. He'll get really good steal numbers, and he's an aggressive rebounder as a point guard. He's not going to score. He's not going to have big scoring numbers. He's going to have poor free throw percentage. I don't think that he's going to shoot 72% from two-point range, which he did at UCLA. So I think his field goal percentage will struggle. But what he also offers, he can hit some threes and he can block some shots. I, like you, won't take him in the top 50 because we just don't know. Like, everything is telling us he's going to be a serviceable player. He's going to be probably very good, but he also might be shit. We've seen high draft picks be terrible. Hasheem Thabeed, anyone? Like Anthony Bennett. These are guys pick two, pick one. Joe Alexander, who was pick six a few years ago. Like guys that didn't even see out their rookie contracts. This can happen. It's really unlikely, but it can happen. Who knows how it all pans out? So I wouldn't pick him at 50, but all three of these guys could very comfortably be in the top 50 by season's end. And this is a really good spot to take a flyer on guys. And Payton and Lynn, as you mentioned, you can get them sliding down draft boards quite a bit. Lynn, especially, like even around pick 100, he's going to be there in a lot of cases. And to me, that's outright robbery. Tier 7, we've got... go ahead.
Yeah, no, sorry. I was just going to say that these guys probably could be in tier 6, but I felt there was just enough of a gap in terms of their overall value. So we've got Rajon Rondo and Jeff Teague. Thank you. So Rajon Rondo, similar sort of player to Alfred Payton. And I've got here that probably these two are the last of the point guards who you can get 7-plus assists from, which increases their value a bit. And Jeff Teague loses a lot of value coming over to the Timberwolves, but he has no competition at point guard and he's going to get ample playing time. So that's really works in his favor in terms of his fantasy value.
I've seen people make the argument, Matt, that Jeff Teague could actually be the same or better this year. I do not buy that at all. Because people are saying, oh, you know what? He averaged 7.8 assists last year playing alongside Paul George. And I counter that by saying he averaged 5.9 assists 2 years ago playing alongside Al Horford, Paul Millsap, Kyle Korver, and those guys. So which one's the real Alfred Payton? Jeff Teague, the one that got 7.8 assists last year, the one that got 5.9 the year before. That's a significant difference there. He's also, he's not going to be able to take the same amount of shots when he's sharing the court with Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, and Jimmy Butler. These are guys that are going to be taking all of the shots. So he is easily the fourth option on offense on this team, like very, very comfortably the fourth option. So yes, he will play more minutes, but I cannot see any way that his value is increased over what it was last season. His shooting has improved the last couple of years, although he was back to under 36% from three last season. He needs to get his spot up numbers and his 3-point shooting back up, which I think they can in this situation, but it's not enough to me to offset the lack of shots, the reduced scoring. And I think Jimmy Butler's going to be running point for this team quite a bit. Tom Thibodeau had Ricky Rubio last year and decided that the best course of action would be to have Andrew Wiggins and Zach LaVine handle the ball. How about when he's got Jimmy Butler with the ball? Like he's going to go, like, let my main scorer handle the ball and distribute, which is what he tried last year and it didn't work. But now that Butler's there and Butler can actually do it, I think that Teague is going to be a significant candidate to be overdrafted. His ADP is 44 on Yahoo and 46 on ESPN. And while that's not egregiously high, there's 6 or 7 guys I'd rather have over him, I think.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's no way I'll be drafting him inside the top 50, that's for sure.
And Rondo's an interesting one because, like Lynn, his ADP is around pick 100, which I don't... Look, the Pelicans' backcourt is disgusting. Now, Rondo's not good. I know he played 2 decent playoff games. I know that. And the Bulls weren't going to win that series because of Rondo, and they didn't lose it because he got hurt. He was shit for the majority of the year. He looked better at the end of the season. But pick 100 is ridiculous because he's playing those minutes. It's, you know, Ian Clark is not that good. Maybe he takes a role because Rondo just implodes, and that's a possibility. But the rebounds, the assists, the steals, that's all going to be there for him, and they're going to be useful. So to me, he is a really, and it sounds really dirty for me to say this, but Rondo's a really good target, and he's going to have more value than what I think a lot of people are thinking.
And not that Frank Jackson was going to play much, but he's just, what, broken his foot?
Yeah, broke his foot. He's like four to 5 months he's going to be out for. So, you know, Jackson was the 31st pick in the draft, the first pick in the second round. So not that he's just any sort of second rounder. He's a guy that, you know, given the absolute crapness that is that Pelicans depth there, he had a real chance to do something, but he won't be doing that. Now, tier eight, there's a bunch of guys here, and some of them have considerable upside, I think, Matt. So go through the group of guys you've got here in tier eight.
Yeah, six guys here. We've got Markelle Fultz, Marcus Smart, George Hill, Reggie Jackson, Dennis Smith, and Patrick Beverley. So here are the other two rookies that everyone wants to know about in Fultz and Smith. How do you see their value for redraft leagues?
I think they're both going to get the 30 minutes a night this year. Now, someone did debate with me. I don't think Smith's going to get 30 because Carlisle's going to play his veterans. And my response to you is their starting point guard last year was an undrafted rookie who played about 20 games. So his competition for the starting point guard job is not a veteran. It's a guy with 40 games NBA experience who's not a starting caliber player. There's JJ Bray who can't handle the starting load. And Seth Curry is like a third-year player who's not really a point guard. He's, you know, more of a guy that plays off the ball. So while that would have been true if Darren Williams was still there or any of these other, you know, veteran point guards, these aren't... Yeah, Yogi Ferrell is not a veteran point guard. He is not the guy that, oh, sorry, Dennis, we can't give you the minutes because we've got to give the steady-handed Yogi Ferrell those minutes. I think that Smith gets 30. He could easily get 33. And you know, I'm really interested to see where he ends up. Same with Fultz. I think that he gets a 30 minutes straight off the bat. Don't buy into any bullshit about resting games and back-to-backs and minutes restrictions for Fultz. He's not having... He'll have minutes restrictions because he's a rookie in his level of play. He's not getting... People just seem to think that the Sixers, everyone that comes in just is on a minutes restriction. That's not what happens at all. They also think that these are such exhaustive minutes restrictions. People forget that by December last year, Joel Embiid's minutes restriction had gone from 24 to 28 minutes. It lasted like 6 weeks before it was bumped by 4 minutes. And then, you know, he was on 28 minutes for the next month and got hurt. But it wasn't like that we're just keeping him low for the whole year. They reassessed it and it was pushed up in 6 weeks' time. So I am fine with those guys in this sort of zone. I want to hear your take, though, on Marcus Smart, because I'm real interested in him for this season.
Yeah, well, he's still going to have a really important role defensively with Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder gone. They're desperately going to need him next to Kyrie Irving as well. But for me, he just still needs to do a little bit more offensively. The steals and the threes are good. The field goal percentage is a killer. Just going to need sort of like you've got him projected at 10 points per game. If you can get that somewhere sort of into the 12 to 14 range, get his field goal percentage somewhere into 40 or the low 40s, that's really going to give him a big boost in value.
That's the thing. Like I've got him projected at 10 points, 1.2 threes, 3.9 boards, 5.3 assists, and 1.6 steals, all right? And he's a 77th ranked player. And that's shooting 37% from the field and 30% from three. If he shoots 42% from the field and 34% from three, it's over. Like, the top 50's done. Like, he's in the top 50. Because 10, 4, and 5, they are such pissy numbers. His minutes are going to be there because he has to play defensively. And Jaylen Brown, you can say whatever you want about him. Marcus Smart's still better than him, and he'll still play those minutes at the one, at the two, at the three as well. So if somehow the shooting comes around and he goes from 37% to 42%, then that number just goes through the roof. And we're talking about a guy that who then maybe becomes 13, 4, and 5.5 with 1.6 steals. And then you're starting to get really interesting with those numbers. And you don't have to take Smart anywhere near any of this zone. Like, he's... So we're talking about a guy that's the 120 in ADP. You can take him late and feel pretty confident that he's going to beat that ranking, even if, you know, we're looking at a worst case scenario that he cannot improve his shot. But if he does, then it's a massive, massive bargain there.
Reggie Jackson's the other one. Which Jackson are we getting? Are we getting, you know, the 8-9 assist that he averaged when he came over to the Pistons? Or are we getting the knee tendonitis concern being outplayed by Ish Smith, Reggie Jackson?
I like Reggie Jackson as a late pick. Again, if it doesn't work, then what have you lost? Probably, yeah, not much. Maybe opportunity of grabbing someone else. But he is going to get first crack at that starting point guard job. It's not going to be Ish Smith. Don't care what anyone says. It's going to be Jackson. If his knee is fine, he'll play his 29 minutes a night. There'll be some dodgy streaks. But if he is fine, then you're talking about top 70 upside, which is pretty good for a guy that you're getting with maybe your last or second last pick. So he's an interesting one there. And George Hill... health is a concern, clearly. He missed 30 games or so last year, had some ankle injuries the year before in Indiana, but he is a guy that when he was on at the start of last season on a team when Gordon Hayward was out, and if you want to look at a talentless team, the Sacramento Kings are much worse than a Gordon Hayward-less Utah Jazz. He was like a top 30 player. So he has got some upside. De'Aaron Fox is there, but Fox is not going to be pushing him immediately. Fox will get some minutes and they can play together at times too, but Hill is going to be a real interesting test case late, and I'm pretty big on him as well as one of those late point guards. So there are some significant late or mid to late round point guards that are pretty interesting. Let's wrap this up with tier 9, Matt. There's obviously more point guards that are available after this, but this is where we're finishing this off here, and maybe we'll talk about a couple other guys later. But who have you got in tier 9?
Yeah, so I list my top 30 in each position. So tier 9, we've got Darren Collison, Zach LaVine, and Seth Curry. Now, I've already had the comment that Zach LaVine will play more as a shooting guard in Chicago, and that's true. The list I was working off still had Zach LaVine ranked as a point guard and Jamal Murray as a shooting guard, so that's why he's not in this list as well. Probably out of those three, I really do like Seth Curry's high efficiency for a guard option. And Darren Collison is the other one. We've seen him put up some good lines and good performances before, but we're just not sure how Corey Joseph will impact him, and whether eventually that could become a bit of a timeshare.
I think Collison's a ripper pick with your last pick. He had top 50 seasons when he played 34 minutes a night, which he probably won't do in Indiana. But even in 31 minutes, it's enough to me. Levine's not someone I'm have any interest in whatsoever. Just don't know when he's going to be back. He won't play 37 minutes a night, and the Bulls should be really cautious with him. And Curry, I could make an argument that he's better than Wes Matthews at this point in their current careers, and maybe he gets those minutes. I'm not sure what Carlisle will do there, but there is a little bit of risk associated with him. But I do like Collison's upside. A couple of guys who, again, you'll probably cover in some of the other tiers because of their dual position eligibility. You mentioned Jamal Murray. He sort of fits in that Marcus Smart tier, the Blue Arrow. We assume that he's going to start and play some significant minutes. He played like 34, 35 minutes a game for the Nuggets in April last season. Yes, Jimmy Nelson was sitting out games, but I don't imagine Jimmy Nelson is going to be an everyday part of the rotation for Denver this season. So I think it's going to be all the Blue Arrow in Denver. And another guy that you'll probably have in your shooting guard tiers will be Malcolm Brogdon, who was the Rookie of the Year last year. I think that kid, Matt, will realize that he probably should play 30 minutes a night from the beginning, not just in March when he finally realized that he was the better option.
He should, correct. And I guess one other one who didn't quite make the top 30 was Milos Teodosic in the Clippers. Now, probably 12-team leagues he's going to be borderline, but I think in 14-team leagues he's going to be ownable just on his assists alone. You've got him projected at 6 assists per game, and that's only in 25 minutes. So it's not very often you can find a player who averages 5 or 6 assists just floating around on the waiver wire. So I think in 14-team leagues and beyond, he'll be definitely worth owning.
Yeah, I have no issue with taking Teodosic with a late pick. He's got significant upside just for getting those assists. He can hit threes, he can get steals. He could also do nothing, but I feel pretty good about him getting those assist numbers. The other guys that are around there, like Chrissy Dunn and Darren Fox, perhaps you want to take with the last pick. Patty Mills is another guy there. And the other guy who's I'm getting more and more excited about is DeLon Wright of the Toronto Raptors. If he moves into the full-time Corey Joseph role, he is a much better fantasy contributor than Corey Joseph. Joseph was playing 26, 27 minutes a night alongside Kyle Lowry, backing up Kyle Lowry. If Wright moves into that role with his ability to block shots, get steals, dish assist, rebound, he becomes a very, very intriguing guy with a late pick. I'd rather have Dunn ahead of him. I'd rather have any of these other guys, Curry and Collison ahead of him. But he is a very interesting type of guy with one of those late picks if he gets into that, which I don't think he will get the 27 minutes a night, but there is that possibility that he just legitimately plays straight into that straight into that Corey Joseph role that we saw last season with the Raptors, and that would significantly help him with his ability to get steals at a pretty good rate. I think you look at Dylan Wright as almost like a Marcus Smart light with a slightly better shooting but not quite as good rebounding numbers. That's sort of how I look at him. And again, we talked about him quite a bit on the Raptors preview podcast. So that does it, Matt, for our point guard tiers. The article is up on Basketball Monster. You can go and have a look at all of that. And if you have any questions, you can direct them towards us on Twitter, me at @RedRock_Beeble and Matt at @SManSports. You can go and direct any vitriol that way or my way if you want to disagree with me about how I talk about turnovers. I'm pretty consistent with that. But just for example, Matt, if we turn turnovers on with some of these guys,
yep.
Not to belabor this point, but we already talked about Westbrook dropping from 2 to 9, but some of these other players like... I think Dennis Smith was the big example. He moved from 100 to 165. Like that is a 65 spot drop. That is crazy. And there's no way that you would say, you know what, Dennis Smith, not draftable in my league because he comes in my league and he has 156 players and Smith's at 165. So therefore he is not draftable. Reggie Jackson goes to 157. Yeah, not draftable. When one category is just totally skewing that, Markel Fultz goes from 70, whatever he is, to 127th. Like these are just drops that are just out of control. Like they're just not Dennis Schroeder from 40 to 86. It's not representative at all. And that's how I think you should be viewing all of this. Of course, Matt, I just plugged your Twitter handle, but we got your shooting guard tiers coming out next, I assume.
We will. They'll be out some stage this week. So I dare say we'll do a pod on that as well, either later in the week or over next weekend.
Yes, we will. We'll also be doing a pod probably tomorrow talking just about projections in general. People have questions and me giving my reasoning behind it, I guess, or why I think certain things are going to happen. Then we'll be smack bang back into the team preview shows during the week. And at some point, I'm going to have Kyle on as well to discuss the differences that we may have in our projections and why we have certain guys higher or certain guys lower. So it's going to be a fun-filled week. There's going to be lots of content coming your way and articles will continue to go up on Basketball Monster. I'm in the middle of my one-man mock draft, which you may remember from last year where I wrote about 14,000 words. Now I'm taking control of all 12 different teams and running them all through the draft tracker and making picks. It's pretty hard to pick against yourself because you can't really say, I'll let Jeremy Lin fall to 90 because one of the other split personalities will end up taking Jeremy Lin at pick 60. So it is a difficult exercise to try and put yourself in different mindsets, but that'll be coming as soon as I can get through it, which it does take quite a while. Matt, go ahead.
Is that a roto or head-to-head format?
That's head-to-head. I will do a roto one at some point. This one's going to be a 12-team, 9-cat head-to-head, and then I will probably do another 12-team, 8-cat roto one at some point just to show the differences there in team-building strategies and how I look at it. So it's not perfect. It's not foolproof because, again, in most cases, I can let Jamal Murray, I can let Jeremy Lin, I can let Gary Harris, I can let Aaron Gordon, I can let Alfred Payton fall, and I can say I can get them at 3 rounds later than where I probably should. I can let D'Angelo Russell fall. But when I'm drafting against myself, don't really have that luxury to do that. So it does skew things a little bit. Matt, thank you for coming back on.
No worries. Thanks, Josh.
All the Matt Smith fans will be happy now that he's back on the podcast. Going to be having some more appearances coming up in the coming weeks. Subscribe to Basketball Monster. It's open. It's ready to go. If you see that box there that says referral code, it's not a discount code. It's just a way of us tracking where the users come from. And you can just use either of our names. You can either use my name, which is Josh. You can use Matt's name, or you can use Kyle as well, just to say, who referred you or where you got the idea to come to Basketball Monster. That's just a way for us to track, where the people are coming from. So that's what that referral code box is. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Damian Lillard.